I felt that it was necessary to come and have a conversation before we enter our national pause tomorrow. And I know that many of you are anxious, many of you have concerns. Some of you have already prepared and making yourself ready for this period of pause. But I felt that it was important to come and speak to you. Over the course of the last few days, I literally have gone across the country, especially this last weekend. And it reinforced in me the need to speak again. I want to say that we need now to be able to spread the message to everyone. There are still too many people, regrettably, who are not wearing masks. There's still too many people who are gathering unnecessarily. And I want to remind Barbadians that this thing is not playing. This thing is real. And to that extent, I'm asking each and every one of us to join the effort in being able to encourage persons in our communities, in our households. You know, at about 3 o'clock this morning, I was reading a story from The Guardian in England, and one of the things that it reinforced again was that the real battle is not so much now in the formal areas of establishment, but it's more in the households and in the communities, and yes, regrettably, in the shops, village bars, and this is not because we're trying to pull at anybody or to literally go after anyone. This is because this is where people congregate. This is where people gather. This is as much a social event as anything else. And I think that we have a responsibility to explain to you, as I've done with my own colleagues and others, that we hear you and we feel the angst. But regrettably, this is not now about us being able to deal with hurting anybody. This is not about any shops being unfeared. It is fundamentally about being able to stop this virus from finding hosts, from finding people to go on and to go after. And let me break it down as it was broken down for me by the public health persons. Today you might start with one, but if you assume that the virus will allow you to infect four persons, every person who is infected on average will probably affect four. And this is not to do with the super spreaders either. This is just normal. Then on the first day, you may have one. On the second day, you may have four. On the third day, you may have 16. On the fourth day, you may have 64. On the fifth day, you may have 256. On the sixth day, you are somewhere 1,024. And I don't want anybody to challenge my math for day seven, but on day seven, you're probably looking at 4,024 times four is 96, 4,096. So that by one person not being careful, that can multiply within 7 days to 4,096 persons. Now, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but I want us to be real. And I want to share one or two things because this is now very personal. This is not the Prime Minister even talking, this is me talking. I know what it is to have a lifelong battle with dieting. And that's why you hear me talk about it all the time. But the one thing I learned a few years ago, about 10, 12 years ago, is that you cannot cheat on diet. There's no cheating on dieting. If you take a little piece here and you drink a little something here, it's not going to give you the results. And the other thing that I've therefore learned with COVID is that you can't cheat and beat COVID. If you want to be up underneath people, you're going to catch it. If you are not careful about wearing your mask and wearing it properly, you put yourself at a greater risk to catch it. If you don't sanitize and you move around with people and then you go touching your eye or your mouth or your nose or whatever, you're giving yourself it from your hands. And I can't find any simpler way of breaking it down, because this war, this battle, this war against COVID, this war against even dengue, will be won by the effort that not just the government puts in, or the Prime Minister puts in, or the leaders of the union and the private sector put in. It will be won if all of us are prepared to put in the effort and to recognize that for the next few days, from the 3rd to the 17th of February, what are we asking you to do? To pause, then to rest, to reflect, and to renew. So if you do the pause and the 3 R's, because in pausing, this is not a time for liming. In pausing, and that's why the beaches are not open in the afternoon, as many have asked. And believe you me, I'm a beach girl. I like beaches. but it cannot be open because this is now only for exercise and not for recreation. Similarly, others have asked for all other kinds of exemptions, and we've had to say to persons, look, we feel your pain, we feel your anxiety, but really and truly, this must be a period of pause, a period to rest, a period to reflect, and a period to renew. And there's so much that we have to reflect on at the individual level, at the level of families, I imagine, too, but also at the level of community and country, because it will not be business as usual going forward. And we're not going to come out of it just like that. So that, my friends, I'm asking all Barbadians to take this time and let us remember that everybody does not watch TV. Everybody does not listen to the radio. Everybody does not even engage in social media. And to that extent, I'm asking each Barbadian who is hearing my voice to join me in asking Barbadians in this pause to rest, to reflect, to renew, but most importantly, to wear a mask, to sanitize and wash your hands always, and above all else, even before the mask wearing and the sanitizing, to keep your distance and, where possible, stand in your yard. I ain't telling you stand in the house, but stand in your yard if you can, stand around it, and even if you are going to talk with people, stay away from people. If anybody comes to your house, and this is the dangerous one, because when people come to our house, it means that invariably we're close to them and we know them, for the most part. But when that happens, we are likely to drop our guard and not wear the mask. I am asking you to make sure that, especially for people who don't live at you, even if they're your children, even if they're your grandchildren, do not drop the guard. Because in dropping the guard, what happens to us is literally is when it spreads. In that one moment, and we have over 1,500 shops in the country. We only need 5 people in 5 different locations doing the wrong thing for us. Now, the fact that a shop will close doesn't mean that it won't happen elsewhere, but we reduce the foot traffic, and those are the types of language that the public health people have continuously used to us, that they need a reduction in the number of people moving around. And in that sense, perhaps the most important thing always is space, space, space. And after space, if you can't get the space that you like, that is where we say to you, wear the mask. And on top of that, sanitize. Because if perchance something happens and you keep your hands clean, when you carry it to your face, you're not going to have it. Now, at the same time, we need to let you know that we will continue now with the project that we started and announced that Minister Walcott is leading on behalf of the country with the University of the West Indies, and that is Operation Seek and Save. And this is simply to ensure that we go to every possible household in the country, and people will come and they'll ask us questions. They'll ask you questions. And we talk a lot about if you have symptoms. They won't banish that word symptoms for now, and let's talk straight. What do they really mean? Your throat sore? You got a nosebleed, your body hurting you, your joints hurting you, whatever it is. If something is wrong, say it. If something ain't right, shout it. Because that's the only way we are going to know to test you and to be able to save you at an early stage. And Dr. Ford and all of the other doctors have been consistent that the earlier we can catch persons with the virus, the greater the chance of survival. And this thing is becoming more and more personal for too many Barbadians, because we all know invariably somebody or somebody who somebody know has it. And that is a little too much for us to bear. Against that background, Operation Seek and Save, I can report to you, as Minister Walcott started to tell the country on Saturday, we now have over 400 persons who were trained by the University of the West Indies in the last few days to do the questions and to be able to ask you the questions in your households. We only need 360 initially, but those other persons are there for backup. We also have 9 full teams, swabbing teams, but we are all in agreement that we would like to have some more people volunteer to be swabbers. And through this broadcast, I'm asking those of you who want to volunteer to be swabbers to call the Prime Minister's office. I'm going to get a number set up from my permanent secretary for you in order to be able to, those who want to be able to help with the swabbing. 9 teams are not bad, but ideally we need to have at least 15 teams in the into the fields doing the swabbing for those persons who are exhibiting some form of symptoms, some form of reaction, not feeling well, and who would be subject then to the rapid antigen tests. These tests don't require us to go to the lab in the same way, but they do require us to have persons tested and to be able to, they'll get the results relatively quickly. It means that other aspects of the system have to be stood up. We've already, as I told you, identified more isolation hotels for those persons whose symptoms are really, really very basic, so that we can focus and deliver the quality health care that the doctors and nurses are delivering at Harrison's Point to those who are seriously affected by the virus. As I indicated to you, and Barbadians are very polite persons, I really am asking every person and every household to cooperate. You know, this morning my father reminded me that in the UK they are doing a similar thing in those areas where they believe the South African variant has been found. And basically what they're doing is locking off those areas and going in and testing everyone, because that's the only way the public health people know to get to the bottom of it. I intend, and yesterday I spoke in the Government Information Service release, you would have seen it, I spoke at the Ministers of Environment meeting for Latin America and the Caribbean. And I made the point then, and it is something that I'm going to write to my colleague leaders globally about, that we have all been doing some form of restrictions. We've all been doing some form of quarantine and restricting movement. What we haven't done is to do it in a coordinated way. And what the world needs now more than anything else is global leadership for global coordination. Because if we can do that and we can coordinate and agree on the distribution of vaccines, which I'll come to shortly, then we are in a position to give the world the best chance of putting this deadly virus behind us, this virus that has claimed 2 million lives, regrettably, across the globe. But that requires leadership and coordination. And at this level in our own country, it is simply what we are trying to do, and others are doing it in their own way. But if we can coordinate globally to go to the United Nations every third week in September, and if we can coordinate globally to go to World Bank and IMF meetings in April and in October, then pray tell, why can't we coordinate as global leaders to have a globally coordinated lockdown and a global coordinated framework for the distribution of vaccines ahead of the development of different variants, which may make it impossible for us to resolve with the current things and vaccines available to us. So this is a matter of global proportion. I am not going to consume you with more of it today, but I'm just letting you know where our head is as a government and what we're thinking about, while at the same time we execute this program domestically. Because remember, Barbados does not exist in the world alone, and this is a global pandemic across every corner of the earth. Now, my friends, I want also, therefore, to reinforce that I really, really, really do want Bajans to cooperate with the persons coming to your house, to be able to ask you the questions. And the person you're helping is you. The person you're helping, first and foremost, is you. The next person you're helping are all of the persons with whom you normally come into contact, who I would have to assume you like or love. And if that is the case, then what is being asked of us is simple and is easy. You know, if we were in a real, real war, we would be seeing bombs. We would be seeing people die before our very eyes. And I'm conscious that this country has been truly blessed and that we really have a grief deficit collectively, because the country has not had to deal with devastation and hurricanes in the last 50 years. The country has not had to deal with devastation and earthquakes. The country has not had to deal with serious mass casualty beyond what we saw at Archcot, beyond what we saw when the party monarch was going on and the bus came down the hill and we lost, I think, 6 persons or so. But really and truly, when you consider what other countries globally have had to face, we have not had those kinds of episodes. And therefore, it makes it difficult to manage the population as we go through this pandemic. The other key thing that is reinforced, and once again, more and more people are writing about it, is that those countries that have a high sense of compliance and discipline are the ones where people are not dying. So in Japan is a huge country, but Japan has lost only 5,000 persons to the virus, largely because Japanese people operate in a very disciplined way in terms of what is required of them nationally. But that also, I suppose, is related to what they have experienced coming out of the 20th century and coming out of World War II. So when you look at the populations of countries similar to Japan, like Mexico, the numbers are much, much, much higher. I say this to make the point that one of the virtues that our country has always been praised for is that Barbadians are pretty much very disciplined people. Barbadians are pretty much people who will do the right thing and have a strong sense of social justice, a strong sense of fairness. That is who we are. And that sense of fairness means that if we see somebody who is unfair, and you know, I asked the others who are doing the ads to start looking at ads like this and to say, Breads, what are you really doing? You really, really, really seriously game by the shop every day and liming and without a mask and know that your mother got sugar bad, 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 and you coming back in at her when the night come? I can't sleep when the night come. And that is that kind of conversation that I am hearing in my head over and over, whether it is in Bush Hall, whether it is in Spikestown, whether it is in St. John, whether it is in Parish Land in Christchurch. Those are the kinds of conversations that need to take place in this country. And to boot, what we will do is that because we are not satisfied that we are reaching everybody through press conferences and news and media and social media, we are going to deploy a number of public address systems across the country, just as we do for other things. You have them when shows are coming, you have them when elections are coming, well, you're going to have them with COVID. And us having to do this pause, rest, reflect, and renew. Why? Because we need to reach as many people as possible. And as I said, as I drove through the country, as I looked at markets, as I looked at shops, as I looked at other areas, for the most part, we are still not quite where we need to be. For sure, there are a lot more people wearing masks today than were before. But do we have enough? Probably not. We need to redouble our efforts. Breathe and come again. So I look forward to that. We do and have had some challenges in the last 4 or 5 days with respect to test results, and I want to address that very briefly. And it's largely because the automatic extractor, the reagents for the automatic extraction of the RNA from the samples is not available. We would have received some from Guyana, and we thank the government of Guyana for that, as I indicated. We have been in negotiations through all of our embassies, plus all of us, literally, as I've told you, from as far back as last year, with the PPE and with the ventilators. Now it is with the reagents and the vaccines. Out there is like the wild, wild, wild west. And I've heard the AG also address that matter for you recently. But let me say to you that the automatic extractor makes life easy. We have enough manual reagents for manual extraction, but that is tiresome, time consuming. And now that I have seen what happens in the lab as well, it's also tiring on the eyes. So it's going to take a lot longer, even though we have Tanta reagents for manual extraction. Let me say to you that the lab ordered, and I want people to remember this, the lab ordered the reagents for the automatic extraction when we had more than tens of thousands in our supply, and they ordered it as far back as September from the manufacturers. And in spite of that, we have not received it in January. Now, I also want to tell you that we have been, as I said, all over the world. We are hopeful that we can try to get some. But the truth is that all kinds of persons are putting restrictions and quotas and all kinds of things in place because they too need it for their own countries. And this is one of the difficulties that a small country such as ours will have, because we are very often price takers as well as now product takers, because we don't have the size to determine or influence the market. And I've told you that over and over. So that we've seen a disruption to global supply chains all over. And we are like every other country, we are the victim of that disruption, particularly as a small state. Large countries suffer from it too. And you see in many of the large states, that's the reason why at the level of states, countries are taking defensive action to protect their state, far less their country. So please bear with us. It does mean we can still do the tests, but it means that we're going to have to formally adjust the timelines that we put out there two, three weeks ago, whenever we did it, in order to reflect the fact that the extraction is now manual for PCR as opposed to automatic. Now, that does not in any way affect the operation Seek and Save, because as I said earlier, that is using rapid antigen tests, which is a completely different type of test from the normal PCR tests that we have been using. I want to come very quickly to the issue of vaccines, and let me at the outset first and foremost thank the government of India and Prime Minister Modi. As you would have heard, I wrote him just over 12 days ago, indicating that our country was facing a peculiarly difficult moment and that we would wish to have both a donation and purchase of vaccines from Oxford AstraZeneca, which, as you know, are being manufactured in India. India is one of the three locations globally for the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccines. We have had commitments from the government of India, and we expect to receive very shortly the first supply of 50,000 for 50,000 persons, which would be 100,000 vaccines. And we hope to be able to start the deployment of that in the very near future. You will get further information from the COVID communications unit on both public education and sensitization, because I am conscious that there are some people who continue to have concerns, and we will meet with them. But there are also a lot of persons who are ready. We have given a commitment, and Cabinet has agreed, that the first beneficiaries must be the frontline workers. And for us, frontline workers go from the medical, and when I say medical, I don't mean doctors alone. I mean any and everybody working in critical medical establishments publicly. And if there is enough, ultimately we will reach to the private as well. We also mean the police and national security forces of the country and critical essential services that keep the country going. If we didn't have electricity, we couldn't even keep the same vaccinations going. So the frontline workers who deal with that. It does not mean that every single employee within a particular agency or department at this point in time, but certainly all of those who are on the front line as we know it. In the same way that we do recognize that our hotel workers, particularly those who are serving people and cleaning rooms, etc., must be in that first batch as well, because and those who are working in supermarkets must be in that first batch, because they are going out there when the majority of us are getting the opportunity to pause and to rest and renew, reflect and renew. So you'll get more details over the course of the next few days from the Health Communications Unit and from the Minister. But suffice it to say that we are at that stage now where we are settling the logistics, and therefore we will be coming at you with the details and the rollout as we go forward. We are still anxiously going forward because we believe that in that 50,000, we can also reach the elderly and the most vulnerable. And I've asked the hospital, for example, and the Ministry of Health through its polyclinics to be able to identify those patients, those persons with multiple comorbidities who must be in that first batch of 50,000 that we go forward with. So in addition to the frontline workers, we have the elderly and the vulnerable based on transparent criteria being determined by the Ministry of Health to go forward. We are therefore going to be working assiduously to get more vaccines, because we recognize that aggressive testing, aggressive vaccination, aggressive communication, these are the things that will help bring us back. And there's a wonderful piece going around on social media. I'm going to put it on my IG page when I finish this discussion. It is from the WHO. Dr. Ford sent it to me at about 1 o'clock this morning, and I was able to reflect on it. It's only a minute, but it reinforces that we really are not at luxury of dropping our guard at any time. And that even if we, and I hope we will be, and I pray we will be successful, that in being successful, we are going to have to manage the review and the bringing back of our society in a measured way to make sure that everybody is, one, buttressed by both aggressive testing and vaccination, as well as aggressive compliance with the protocols. The last time I spoke to you, I indicated that we would be adding a new category of person, chief compliance officer and compliance officers for protocols, which is different from the COVID monitoring unit. They tend to be more enforcing at the level of taking action. These will ensure that the compliance is across every area. And as I told you, while a lot of the private sector entities have perfected it, I'm not satisfied that we are doing as well as we should in large government departments, particularly when somebody does not come to work every day to make sure that people adhere to the protocols. The risk of them not adhering to protocols in large government departments, in households, or in communities and blocks and shops is just too much of a risk for us to carry at this point in time because of the density of our island. My friends, I've come here today to have this conversation with you and to say a number of things that I hope that you will reflect and hold on to. But above all else, what I want you to hold on to is we need you for the next 2 weeks to commit to yourself. It is for that reason that on Sunday, I'm asking for at midday for everyone in this country to pause, literally pause, to pray and to reflect on what we must do to save our nation and to save our people. I believe that we are a country, whether you are Christian or whether you belong to another religion, we are a country that literally believes in a higher force. And I hope that we can collectively as a nation pause on Sunday at midday for 5 minutes, for us to pray, for us to meditate, for us to reflect, to do whatever you do best. And I'm not talking just to the people who are accustomed going to church. I'm talking about all of us. Because youngsters will tell you about the higher force and tell you about Jah and all of those things. But I want us to do that on Sunday while recognizing that for the full 2 weeks, reflect, relax, renew, do those things. This time will pass fast. When they told me last year that I had to go for that operation and they told me that literally a couple days before I went and everything just seemed as though it was rushing on me and I was in the middle of dealing with COVID with you, if you can recall, I just had to humble myself and recognize that there is a higher force and that clearly this was a moment for me to rest, reflect, renew, and recuperate. Hopefully, you don't have to recuperate. And that's why I've only chosen the first 3 hours and hope you don't have to experience like me the fourth hour or regrettably those few people who are now currently battling COVID. The number that I asked earlier for the Prime Minister's office for anybody who wants to volunteer in the swabbing team is 535-5352. 535-5352. If you remember numbers like me, you look for the things. This has in four fives and threes and twos. 535-5352. So anyone who is in a position to swab because you are previously or related to the medical fraternity as a nurse, as a doctor, as a lab technician, please call there and help us with the remaining teams. But we do have 9, I'm told by Minister Walker, actually that 9 is now 11, and we do hope that we can pull some more. So ladies and gentlemen, Bajans, all of us in this together. And you know, I have every confidence that we can make it and that we can make it together. But I recognize that not everybody's listening to my voice today. So those who are listening to my voice today, I want them to hear from the rest of you who are listening because I need you now to be part of this army. I need you to be part of the soldiers. I need you to be part of the amplification of my voice and of the message that we need. Because in this, as I said, you cannot cheat and beat COVID in the same way that you can't cheat and diet. You cannot cheat and beat COVID. And I'm going to talk to you every few days, sometimes not from a lab court, sometimes from home by me, because it is important that we keep talking with each other and letting people know that, yes, we know that this ain't easy, but guess what? Our parents and grandparents, our great-grandparents, went through far more than this and they came out and they made us, and they made us basically in their own image, and they made us to be strong. And it is up to us. It is up to us not to let them down, and it is up to us not to let our children down for the future. How we manage this moment in time, and I'm talking from all kinds of people, how we manage literally will make a difference. Minister Walker is now distracting me and telling me that we now have already 14 volunteers. You see why I feel so proud to be Prime Minister Barbados and to be a person, a Bajan, because I know that deep down, in less than 15 minutes, we got 14 volunteers. I want that same spirit to obtain between now and the 17th of February when this finishes. The 18th is a new day. I'm conscious that the 17th is Ash Wednesday. And just as we pray on Sunday for those who are Christians, I have every confidence that the Christian community will come up with an appropriate service on Ash Wednesday for all of us as we prepare to reopen the country on the 18th. The Lord has been our people's guide for near 400 years. With him still on our side, we have no doubts nor fears. I believe that we shall win this battle. And in the words of the one who has carried it most for us, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostick, I end by telling you, there shall be no retreat. There shall be no surrender. God bless Barbados, and God bless Bajans. Thank you.